2 hours north of Sydney.
Ferris Wheel. Ferris, Wideman's
Ferry. Wideman's Ferry, that's Ferry.
Is the Mechie who started the place.
That's fine. I came and she passed away in 1994.
Oh, she already passed away. Yes. I wonder about Tani, Tante Paolo.
Tante Paolo, at the moment, he is Lawrence Mill. And he's a bit sick at the moment. Because he's very old now.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit of dementia. He's in an old age care.
I see. He was the first monk I talked to before ordination.
All right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I went to Wat Bo Wan to seek for ordination. And I met a group of Westerners, monk. And I asked him, who can I talk to about ordination? And they said, well, they had a senior monk. He was about 10 pounds out then. That was in 1975.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, and one of them took me to see him in his kuti. Mm-hmm. And we had a talk for about maybe half an hour. And I told him about my practice. I was following the four foundations of mindfulness instruction. And I told him, I'm ready to ordain. Can you help me? And he said, yeah, yeah, he'll go talk to the abbot, Tansom Det. And Tansom Det then asked to see me, so he brought me to see him. And he just arranged for a date of ordination.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. So I stayed with Tan Kanti Paolo. He's got a little room in front of his kuti. So I'd be his temple boy.
All right.
I eat what is left over from his bindabad.
All right.
And if he has to go outside the temple, I go with him to carry the money for him. He was preparing to go to Indonesia and Australia.
Right. That's right. 75. He started the Buddha Dhamma in 78. But previously he stayed in the monastery, in the Sydney monastery before then.
Yeah. So I stayed with him for maybe 10 days or 2 weeks. Then he left before my ordination.
For Indonesia and Australia back then?
Yeah. Huh? Yeah. He was getting his chart, his visa and whatever ready. So I accompanied him to carry the money for him. And so he's the first person that I met, a monk, first monk. And I owe him a lot because he made my ordination possible.
Right, yeah. Yes, sir. Interesting comment.
Because Wat Bo Wan is considered to be a prestigious wat. And usually people who go there usually have connection in high places. Sure. Their family or their status. Yeah, but for ordinary people, if they don't know any monks in there, they don't go.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I read about the temple from Jack Kornfield's book, The Guide to Meditation Temple.
Okay.
And I heard that there were Westerners there, so I thought I can talk to Westerners. Yeah. Because I spent 5 years in the States and I just came back recently. So I could use my connection to the Western monks. Because when Tansom Det met me, he asked me, do I know anybody in this temple? I said, I don't know anybody. I just met this foreign monk.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, interesting karma, because you're Thai, you can go to any temple.
Yeah. So I picked that temple because Jack Kornfield recommended if you want to go to a forest temple, you should go and ordain at Wat Bo Wan.
Oh.
For Dhamma Yu. Then once you ordain, Tansom Det would allow you to go to practice, live with a forest teacher. Oh. So I... that's how I got to know all the forest monastery in the northeast.
Okay. From Jack Hornfield's pamphlets.
That too, and also the monk, the Western monks who stay in Webelon, they use that place as a staging place for them to go to the forest temple. So I heard of all the other teachers, Ajahn Fan, Ajahn Mahabhu, Ajahn Kao, Ajahn Tate. Yeah. So I picked Ajahn Mahabhu to try to make my first stop.
Right.
But, yeah. And once I got there, I just got stuck. I stayed there for 9 months.
All right.
Because it suited my temperament, because I was looking for a quiet place to meditate and with no other work to do. And Ajahn Mahabhu stressed the practice of meditation, and he kept the extracurricular work to the minimum. So I like the place and like his teaching, so I stay with him. Well, this is a brief history. Yes.
And you didn't visit any other forest monasteries?
No. Once you get there, Ajahn Mahabhu said you should practice, you shouldn't go anywhere. Because any other places, they are all the same, they teach you the same thing. He didn't want to let the monk go pay respect to other teachers during the Kalpansa period.
Really?
Okay. He just went by himself, alone. Okay. He wants to. He didn't want to disturb the monk's practice. He knew that once the monk goes out of the monastery, the senses start to come through the senses door, and it can start to disrupt the peace of the mind. So he tried to protect us from exposing ourselves to all the bombardments of the senses, like the thing you see, the thing you hear. Because once you go out, when you come back, you'll find it difficult to calm it down. It takes a while before you can go back to the state before you went out. So he thought that the pros and cons of going to pay respect to teachers not worth the not worth the cost of the disturbance of the mind.
Yeah, interesting. So even great teachers, it's better to stay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Because he's already a great teacher himself. So one great teacher and another great teacher, they are the same. Yeah. So he really very clever. He very smart. He think of the welfare of his students' mind more than anything else. So he try to protect their welfare, protect the mind from being disrupted or being agitated and restless. So once you stay there, you expect to stay there at least for the first 5 years with him. He will let you go anywhere without any good reason. And reason usually means family emergency or medical emergency. But if you just want to go, say you want to go see the other temples or pay respect to the other teachers, he won't let you go. It's a waste of time. You're distracted. Your defilement starts to deceive you, telling you it's time to go out. You know? But your goal, your purpose is to go inside. Because that's when your nirvana is. Your mother is inside, not outside. You only went to see a teacher to tell you to go inside. Once you know that you have to go inside, then there's no need to go outside. See, you're still going outside. You won't find nirvana in all these places you're going. The only thing you'll find is a mirror pointing you back to go inside. So when you go home, you should stay put and meditate in your home. Then you'll find nirvana there, or in your monastery or in your temple. if you still keep going outside, looking for teachers, looking for places, you'll never find Nibbana.
What would your advice, Ajahn, to a person looking for ordination, how to find the right monastery, quote unquote, or right teacher?
You just have to try it out, I guess, trial and error. But I think the most important thing is to find yourself first. The problem is you don't know who you are, what you are, what you want. So you have to go look for people to tell you what you want. Yeah. And that's just not good enough, because what they tell you, sometimes you don't believe them. So what you really should do is get into the practice and find yourself in yourself. Find peace in yourself. Once you know what you're looking for, then the next thing you do is look for a place where they can nurture, help you to develop what you want to become. So you have to first be able to meditate and find samadhi or calm. Once you have samadhi or calm, then you know what you want. You want a place where you can practice without any distraction. And you want a teacher who can guide you to a higher state of calm that you haven't yet reached. So this is what you... If you haven't found yourself yet, you haven't found any peace in yourself, your defilement will keep telling you to go here and there. Even though you find the right place, the right teacher, but your defilement will not be satisfied because your mind is not calm, not happy. So what you should look for is calm in your mind. And the thing that will make your mind calm is constant mindfulness. You have to try to develop mindfulness all the time, from the time you get up to the time you go to sleep. Try to control your thoughts, stop you from thinking aimlessly. You can use a mantra, Buddho, Buddho, Buddho. From the time you open up your eyes, just stop reciting Buddho, Buddho while you get up, go do your routine, your chores, bathing, washing your face, brushing your teeth, combing, eating, anything that you do without having to use any thoughts. Use a mantra just to prevent your mind from thinking about this and that. Because when your mind thinks, it can make you restless, because you will start to have desire or cravings for things or for doing something. We want to control this desire, this craving, by stopping thinking about things or people. You can use a mantra. If you stick to your mantra, then you cannot think about that person, that thing or this thing.
Some people find a Buddha doesn't work so well. Do you recommend any other one? Or is it cool?
Just watching your body. Watch your activity, your body activity.
Just be in the body? Or?
Yeah, just watch. If you're combing your hair, just be with the combing of your hair. If you're brushing your teeth, just watch your brushing. Don't brush and think about something else at the same time. Just be with one thing, with your body. This is Gayakata Sati. Mindfulness of body. And when you sit, you then watch your breath, anapanasati, the in and out breath. If you have strong mindfulness, your mind is not distracted, doesn't roam around thinking about everything else, and focus, concentrated on your breath, your mind will eventually become calm. And you find the happiness that arises from this calm. you will be content and happy. And you do not want to have anything anymore. But it is only temporary, because after you withdraw from this state, your mind starts to think, and your cravings and your desires start to come up. And you have to continue on with your mindfulness. Try to prevent your mind from thinking. And when you're free, go back and sit again. Try to sit as much as possible. Try to calm your mind as much as possible. Until to the point where you are adept at calming your mind. You can calm it anytime you want. Once you have this ability, then the next step after you come out of your samadhi or calm, when your mind starts to think aimlessly, you direct your mind to think the truth. Think about the truth of your body. Think about the truth of your possession, of the things of people that you are connected and attached to. You want to see that they are impermanent, that they will separate from you one day. This in order to prepare your mind to accept the truth when it happens. If you're ready and to accept the truth, then you have to face separation from people and things, you will not be sad. But if you don't contemplate and remind yourself of this truth, when people or things separate from you, you will become sad and happy. So this is the next level we call wisdom or insight. Insight is to see that everything is impermanent. Everything, every people, and your body is impermanent. And one day you will have to lose them. And you can lose them in a calm and peaceful way, or you can lose them in a sad and depressed way. If you're not prepared, then you will become depressed. You will become sad, miserable. But if you are ready, willing to let them go, then you will not be sad or be depressed. So this is the next level. After you have the ability to calm your mind, the next step is to contemplate and constantly reminding yourself of the impermanent nature of everything that you are attached to. Yeah. Everything that you are attached to, you have to lose them one day. And you can lose them happily, or you can lose them unhappily. If you understand that there's nothing you can stop you from yourself from losing these things, so what's the point of trying to resist the truth? Then you will accept the truth and let things go when the time comes. When you are ready, when you are willing, when things happen, you will not feel bad. You will not feel sad. So this is basically what we are trained to do. Trained to let go of everything. Because if we don't, we can be sad, we can be miserable, especially with our body. We have to lose this body one day. So we have to train our mind to be ready for losing it. The body has two problems. One is sickness, the other is death. Sickness is the pain of the body. We usually don't like the body to get sick, to become painful. But we have to experience them. We have to face them, because they happen. And the one way to face them in a way that won't make you sad or disturbed is to face it calmly, you know, with mindfulness and wisdom. If you have strong mindfulness when your body is painful, you can calm your mind, like using a mantra or focusing on your breath, and then the pain of the body will not disturb your mind. The pain will be there, but the mind will be calm, and the mind will not react to the pain of the body. The problem is when the mind reacts to the pain of the body, it creates another kind of pain. We call it mental pain or dukkha. How do we react to the pain? We wish it to go away, right? We want to get rid of it, or we want to get away from it. Yeah. And if you cannot get rid of it, then you become miserable. You experience another kind of pain, the mental pain, which is a lot stronger than the physical pain. What makes us miserable is not the physical pain, but the mental pain that arises from our reaction toward the physical pain. So what the goal here is to stop reacting to the physical pain, to leave it alone. And you can use samadhi or mindfulness to leave it alone. When there's pain, don't pay attention to the pain. Focus your attention on something else, like your breath or on a mantra. If you can focus and stick to the mantra or your breath, then you will not be able to react to the physical things. So when you don't react, then you're not creating another type of pain, which is the mental pain. If there's no mental pain, then the mind will not be affected by the physical pain. It's the mental pain that affects the mind, that causes the mind to become miserable, not the physical pain. So there are two methods of dealing with this physical pain. The first one is use mindfulness. Try to focus your mind on something, and in order to stop your mind from reacting to the physical pain. If you can focus on the mantra or on your breath, then the mind will leave the pain alone, see, the physical pain alone. Then the mind is not creating another pain, the mental pain. So if there's no mental pain, then the mind can live with the physical pain. But this will be a temporary measure. Every time you face pain, you have to use this method. But if you want to kill the problem once and for all, you have to use insight or wisdom. Insight is to understand the nature of the pain, that it is impermanent, that it comes and goes, that it is anatta, it is not under your control. You cannot control your physical pain. You cannot tell it to come or go. So if you can understand this truth, then you want to teach your mind to accept the physical pain. And when it comes, just live with it. Don't deny, don't react, because it is not something you can do about it. Only thing you can do about it is just to face it calmly. See the anicca, dukkha, anatta of the pain. Vedana is anicca, vedana is dukkha, vedana is anatta. See? So if you don't want to have dukkha with the vedana, with the physical pain, then you just have to accept it for what it is. When it comes, let it come. When it goes, let it go. Don't have any desire to get rid of it or to have it disappear, because you cannot do it. You might be able to do it sometime. Like if you take some medicine, you might relieve some of the physical pain. But it'll come back again until you die. You know. The only way to have no physical pain is not to have a body. So if you don't want to have physical pain, stop coming back and having a new body, stop rebirth. See? And to stop rebirth, you have to use mindfulness and wisdom to stop all kinds of your cravings and desire. Because it's your craving and your desire that keep you, bring you back to have a new body. When this body dies, your mind still craves for things to see, things to hear. So you need a body to have eyes and ears for, to see things and to hear things. So when this body dies, your mind will then go look for a new body. Like you used to driving a car. If your old car breaks down, you go buy a new car because you still want to drive around, go here and there. But if you stop your desire to go here and there, to drive around, then when your old car breaks down, you don't need to buy a new car because you don't want to go anywhere anymore. So the Buddha said, if you want to stop from coming back, repeatedly reborn, you have to stop your three cravings. Craving for sensual gratification, kama, tanha. Craving for being, pava, tanha. And craving for not being, vipava, tanha. These are the three cravings. Craving for sight, sound, smells, and taste. Like see a movie, listen to music, go out and have fun, you know. Going places, hot on a holiday. It's a sensual gratification. And the desire to be in, to become something or somebody, like to be rich, to be famous. And the desire not to be something, like not to get old, get sick or die. So these are the three desires that you have to get rid of. When you sit and let the physical pain arise, you're trying to get rid of your vipavatana, your desire not to be painful, not to face the physical pain, not to have the physical pain. But you cannot get rid of the physical pain because it's part of the body. But you can get rid of your mental pain by accepting the physical pain. Treat it like the weather. You're not reacting to the weather. You never want to try to change the weather, right? Because you know you cannot change them. So why try to change your physical pain? It's the same thing. You cannot change them. Can you stop the rain? Can you tell the sun to come out? You cannot. It's the same way with your physical pain. You cannot tell it to go away. You cannot tell it to disappear. Ask it to come when it doesn't come. You have to leave it alone, just like you leave the weather alone. Because they are the same. They are anatta. Anatta means they are natural processes. They are not something that you can control. We could control some of it some of the time. So it causes us to have this delusion to think that we can control them all the time. But eventually you're going to come across to the point where you cannot control it. You cannot get rid of it. So the best way is to leave it alone. If you leave it alone, then you're not creating this mental pain, which is a lot stronger, more unbearable than the physical pain. And if there's no mental pain that arise from your desire to get rid of the physical pain, then you can stay with your physical pain. Then you can let it come and go. Once your mind understands this nature, then it will no longer have any reaction to the physical pain. It leaves the pain alone. Not afraid, not despising it. Just like something that, just like the weather, like the rain or the snow or the sun or the wind. You just leave them alone, let them come and let them go. So this is what you have to let go, the physical pain and then also the body itself. the body itself one day will stop breathing, right? It cannot breathe forever. One day it's gonna turn into a corpse. So you start to think about the future of the body and train your mind to accept this truth. Because if you deny or resist, you're creating this dukkha, this suffering in your mind. But if you don't resist, you don't deny, you accept the truth, you don't react to death, you just let it be, then your mind will be calm and peaceful and not hurt by the death of the body. You have to look at the body as something that doesn't belong to you. This is a temporary possession. The body, you are not the body, you are the mind. The mind uses the body as a servant. The mind tells the body what to do. In order for you to come here, you have to first tell your body to come here. You have to think first. The mind is the one who thinks, who knows. But the body doesn't think or doesn't know. The body just takes order from the mind. But the mind is delusional. It thinks that it is the body. So it becomes strongly attached to the body. When in fact it just owns the body temporarily. It gets the body from the father and the mother, from your parents. Your parents are the ones who create this body for you. And you, the mind, in form of the spirit, come and take over the body after birth. When the body comes out, then you use the mind tells the body what to do. Learn how to use the body. Learn how to walk, learn how to stand, learn how to eat, learn how to talk and everything. It's the mind who's learning the process of manipulating the body. And since no one knows that the mind and the body are two separate entities, it's all assumed that they are one and the same thing. Everybody assumes the body and the mind is one and the same. But the Buddha discovered the truth that they are separate. They only join here like conjoined twins for a brief period, maybe for a period of the lifespan of the body. After the body dies, the mind then disengages from this body and it goes on to the next destination, depending on the karma that it performed during the lifetime.
Like we all want to, most people want to let go of painful feelings, but it's not just an act of will. So how do you to let go of painful body feelings?
You have to use rationality to do that. As I tried to explain to you just now, look at the pain like it's the weather. Right. Leave it alone. Can you tell the sun to disappear? Can you tell the rain to come right now? You cannot. You just take them as they come. If you have pain, just leave it alone. And one way to leave it alone is just to focus on something else, on a mantra or on your breath, so you don't go engage with the pain. See? This is the first step to deal with the pain by using mindfulness. And then the second step, once you can deal the pain with mindfulness, then the next step is to use rationality. Use wisdom. Look at the pain as if you would look at the weather. It's anatta. It doesn't belong to you. You cannot control it. You cannot tell it what to do. You cannot tell it to come and go. It comes as it likes. It goes as it likes. Only thing you can do with it is just watch it. Like you watch the weather.
But sometimes when it rains, we bring out umbrellas and stuff. Sometimes it's painful, we change posture. So you're saying don't change posture, just watch it? Or
yeah, if you change one time, when you get sick, and no matter how you change your posture, it won't disappear. You got cancer, and you got pain in your body. But now they try to use medicine. If medicine doesn't work, then they use the bullet or injection. because they could not withstand the pain. And this is all vipava tanha. As long as you still have vipava tanha, you still have to come and reborn again. And then you'll face the same problem and solve the same problem the same way again. So you'll be stuck within this vicious cycle.
So a lot of Kripa Acharyas recommend doing dukkha vedana. Is that also something you...
That's what it is. Yeah. Dukkha vedana is pain, physical pain. Because if you wait for the actual pain to arise from sickness, it might be a long time away. And you won't have enough time to deal with it properly. So you want to use the what we call our initiated pain by sitting and let the pain arise, and then try to deal with this pain the same way as you would deal with the pain of the sickness. That you have a stomach ache or headache. Once you know how to deal with it, you will not suffer from this ache and pain of the body. So that's why we have to sit a long time to let the pain arise and then teach the mind how to deal with the pain in such a way that it's not suffering. And that, I say, there are two levels. The first level, the easy one, is to use mindfulness. Just to concentrate on something else so that you don't react to the pain. You don't create this wish or desire to have the pain disappear. If you don't have this wish or desire, then there will be no mental pain. Once you can do this, the next step is to teach your mind to look at the face, look at the pain face to face, and just leave it alone. It's not that bad. You know. It's just your dislike caused you to want to get rid of it. So, but in fact, they're just like the other side of the feeling, the good feeling and the bad feeling. They're both feeling. Like the sound you hear, good sound and bad sound. What's the difference? That sound, right? If somebody says something bad about you, you feel bad. If somebody says something good about you, you feel good. But they are sound, right? Okay. Feeling are the same thing. They are feeling. Good feeling and bad feeling, they are feeling. And if you can take good feeling, you should be able to take the bad feeling. It's the problem is not the feeling, it's your reaction to the feeling that caused you to be unable to handle the bad feeling. Because every time you have a bad feeling, you create this mental suffering. This is what makes you not able to take the bad feeling. It's your mental suffering, your denial, your desire to get rid of this bad feeling. See? But with good feelings, you have no denial. You embrace it, right? So you're happy with this good feeling. So you should do with the same with the bad feeling. When you have bad feeling, which you embrace it, just like you embrace the good feeling. See? But you don't. You want to get rid of it. And that's when you're creating this mental suffering, mental pain. If you embrace the bad feeling, you'll be happy, just like you embrace the good feeling. Just like the sound, embrace the bad sound. If somebody says something bad, say, thank you, you know, sounds good. You know, sounds just like the praises you give me. What's the difference? It's the same person speaking from the same mouth with the same sound. But it's just our interpretation of the sound that make us feel good or bad toward those sounds, that's all. But they are sound, right? I use this to compare to the feelings. See? When I said I compared the sound, if I listen to a music that I like, if I turn it up full volume, I still can enjoy it. But if I hear some music that I don't like, even if on the lowest level of the volume, it still makes me feel bad. So what's the difference? It's my reaction toward the sound, that's all. So this is what we have to come to retune our reaction, to make it equal. If you can embrace good sound, then you should embrace the bad sound.
It's very hard.
It's hard, but you can do it. That's what we call practice. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. Then eventually you can embrace everything. And the Buddha gave you the tool. The tool is to use mindfulness to pull your mind away from reacting to those sound or feeling. When you have to face something you dislike, just concentrate on a mantra or chanting. So you can forget about what you are facing. And when you forget, then your mind will not react. When it doesn't react, then your mind becomes peaceful and calm. Understand? Right now you don't have, what you don't have is mindfulness. So you don't, if you have mindfulness, you can get rid of this problem easily. So try to develop mindfulness. Use a mantra or concentrate on something on your body activity. Stop your mind from thinking, because your mind, when it thinks, is that it will react. It will think in a way of reacting to things, either embracing or denying things. When it can embracing, it's happy. When it cannot embracing, then it's not happy. See the sound.
It's only a sound.
Yeah, sound. It depends on how you react. She jumps.
I Ajahn, is it possible for someone who is unenlightened to actually see and accept the breakdown of the body?
Well, that's the purpose of practice. To practice to become enlightened. When you're enlightened, it means you see the truth of the body. And when you're not seeing the truth yet, you just have to keep teaching it to see the truth. The problem is the mind doesn't want to look at the truth. That's why we have to force it to keep contemplating on aging, sickness, and death all the time. If you keep contemplating, then you will eventually see it. The reason why you're not seeing it is because you don't want to think about it. When you don't think about it, you forget. Then it is as if it doesn't happen. So what you have to do is to keep reminding yourself that the body will get sick, get old, and die. And there's nothing you can do about it.
But sometimes I become afraid, like scared.
I know. That's because your mind is not calm enough to handle the truth. That's why you have to first meditate to calm your mind first. You need to have samadhi first before you can go on to insight, go on to contemplating the truth. That's why you need to develop mindfulness first. If you have strong mindfulness, then you can calm your mind. And when your mind is calm, then you can look at the truth. And you will not feel any scare. You will not be scared of the truth. That's why the Buddha taught samadhi before you go to panya or wisdom. And in order to get samadhi, you need to have mindfulness. That's where the four foundations of mindfulness come into play. So the first instruction is that go sit under a tree and then meditate. Focus your attention on your breath until your mind becomes calm. Once your mind becomes calm, then you can look at the truth of the body. You can investigate the nature of the body. You can investigate the nature of feelings. You can investigate the nature of your mind. But if you don't have calm, you will not be able to, because your mind will be distracted or be pushed by the defilements that go, think of other things. The defilement like you to go think about things that are nice and beautiful, long-lasting, permanent, even though they never exist. But the mind keep looking, the defilement keep telling the mind to go look for them. instead of looking at the truth. That's why there's always this story about going after the eternal youth. There's no such thing, but the defilement can deceive the mind to think that there is something like that. Did you want us to ask something?
I wanted to ask about when you're focusing on your meditation object, how to like keep it in your mind without holding it too tightly, or just kind of sometimes I ask as I've done the same, sometimes it gets
Can you give an example?
Sometimes it gets like tight here or something, and you feel like your mind's kind of getting, it's not really getting like calm and peaceful like what your intention might be or something.
Because your mindfulness is not strong enough and your defilement reacts. The pain that you feel, tightness between your brow or anything in your body, they are the result of the reaction of your defilement. The defilement doesn't like to be restrained. So when you start to restrain it, it starts to feel uptight. So if you cannot focus on your breath, then you should use something else first, like chanting, reciting the sutta. Because your defilement wants room to move around, wants to think. So let it think about the sutta instead of thinking about going here and there. Recite the sutta. And after you're reciting for half an hour, then your mind will become more calm. Then you can then focus on your breath. So you first have to get rid of the defilement's energy, the restlessness of the defilement. It wants to think about this and that thing, and it doesn't want to focus on something, on one object. Then you can use the reciting of the sutta to let off the steam of the defilement. After you recite for 1 hour, you feel tired and you don't feel like thinking about anything. Then you can watch your breath.
Is walking meditation another?
Walking or sitting is the same. It has nothing to do with the mind. When you walk, you sit, you just want to change posture to maintain your body in a working condition. If you're sitting only and never walk, then your body can become sick from sitting too much. So sitting or walking is just a matter of changing the body position. But the mind is still the same thing. The mind still has to be controlled by mindfulness. You can walk and you can focus on your walking, or you can recite the sutta while you walk. Or if you walk a lot, you might then become tired to think about anything. You might have to walk for a couple of hours. And then you might want to sit and then might be able to concentrate on your breath.
I think there are so many suttas. Is there any certain suttas that you would recommend?
Well, if you want to use it as an exercise of the mind, you can use any sutta. They are the same, to get rid of the restlessness of the mind. But if you want to have right understanding, then you have to choose the proper sutta for you. If you want to understand the method of meditation, then you use the four foundations of mindfulness. If you want to understand the Noble Eightfold Path, then you have to recite the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. So each sutta has a different instruction for different purpose. You can use the Mangala Sutta. It can tell you the 30 steps to enlightenment. Asevana jabalana malitana jasevana. Associate with the wise. Try to stay away from the foolish. These are the instructions that the Buddha teaches us to do. So you can choose whatever you want. It depends on what you want to learn, what you want to know. But if you want just to use to get rid of your of the mental restlessness, then you can use any sutta or any chanting, the regular chanting that we do. This is a way of warming up the mind, or calming down the mind, not warming up, but calming down the mind. Because in your daily life, you might be thinking, working, and you use the mind so much that it's still very active. And when you want to sit and meditate, you cannot meditate, because your mind is still thinking about what you did, what you were doing. So you use the chanting to slow it down. And after you chant for a while, then the mind becomes calmer. Then you will be able to concentrate on your meditation object.
Myself, I found Metta Sutta is calming.
Metta Sutta. Yeah, okay, you know. This can also calm your mind. Especially if you have problem with people, if you hate people, if you're angry at people, then you use Metta Sutta and it calms you down.
And also Mangala Sutta.
Yeah. Okay. I use the four foundation of mindfulness when I first started to practice the Satipatthana Sutta. When I first started to sit and focus on the breath, I found it not easy. So then I just recited the whole sutta. It took about 40 minutes. Yeah.
Long after version. That, the long version.
I'm not sure which. No, I'm sure. But it was in English.
In English.
I used the trans because. You can also understand what you recite.
What is sutta?
The four foundation of mindfulness.
Satipatthana. Yeah. Sutta.
It tells you how to meditate. It tells you how to develop mindfulness. It tells you how to contemplate on the nature of the body, the feelings, and the mind.
So not important to chant in Pali or recite?
No.
Okay.
Because the sutta are teaching, and you have to understand what you listen to. You're so dumb. You listen to something you don't understand. You're wasting your time. Mm. Like, if I talk Thai to you right now, would you be able to understand?
Very little.
Okay. That's why we have to speak the same language. The Buddha talked in Pali, because people in those times listen to Pali. They only understand Pali. But we keep using this language even we're not understanding it anymore. But fortunately, we have translations. If we don't have translation, we won't be able to understand what the Buddha taught us. So if you want to have understanding, you have to listen or read the language that you can understand. The reason why they preserve the Pali is because they want to preserve the original. They are afraid that things can get lost in translation later on. So they want to preserve that. But when you study, you want to study the language that you can understand.
Of course, but I still need the Pali chanting to feel familiar, even I understand in different ways.
You can chant. You can chant in English also, but since you never did it, so you didn't know that it is as effective as chanting in Pali. It's just language, and so on. So if you just want to chant to calm your mind, then you can chant any language, Pali or English or Thai. But if you want to chant so that you can understand what it's talking about, then you have to chant in the language that you can understand.
Ajahn, when chanting, what is the important thing? I mean, the speed, does it matter if you chant slowly or fast?
You can do it as you like, as you feel comfortable.
As long as we are mindful.
The point is to be mindful, not to chant what I'm thinking about something else at the same time.
I'd like to recite Buddha because it's a more coarse object, so I find it easier to keep in mind and say in regular activities. I find it easier to keep that in mind than the body or something. But then if I do something like chanting or I'm listening to a talk, I can't keep Buddha because...
No, you cannot, because they will be competing with each other.
So that's okay to...
Right, when you listen, then just keep listening.
Okay.
And when you chant, you just keep chanting.
When I go back to something else, just let Buddha come back.
Right, right. And because you can start putto if you're not thinking. You just walk. If you can watch your body and not thinking about anything, then you don't need to use putto either.
Because I heard from Longtan Mahapao's talks that he was like putto all day and it became fixed in his mind.
Uh-huh. When he said that he was alone, he didn't do anything. He was just... being alone, so he can control, he can use butto to control everything. But if you have to talk to someone, you have to stop. Like right now, can you still use butto?
No.
Okay. Be sensible.
I read recently instructions from Ajahn Tate on concentration. And he said, for example, when you say you choose the breath, then you look at the breath, and at the same time you look at the mind, and you look at the mind perceiving the breath. What do you think of that instruction?
If you are capable to do that, you can do that. But when you first start, you should just focus on just the breath alone. Because your mindfulness is not strong enough to look at both things at the same time. The reason why he wants you to look at your mind is to see whether your mind is mindful or not. See, sometimes you might be looking at the breath and your mind still be sticking out and thinking about something else. Maybe this is what he means. When you look at the breath, look also at the mind, whether it is thinking about something else or not. If it is, then you have to bring it back to the breath only. Okay? Yeah. You should, when you meditate, you should use your primary object as your point of focus. And your mind is the secondary object to see whether your mind is being distracted by other thoughts or not.
I found it easier.
You found which one is easier.
That instruction made it easier for me to stay focused on my breath.
Okay, and then whichever way that makes it effective for you, then that's the way for you. The goal is to calm the mind, to stop your thoughts. So, it's almost an hour already. Okay.
Okay, thank you so much for your time.
All right. Let me give the anumodana and we can stop this session. And now continue on with the second session later on in Thai. Yatha vare vaha pura pare purengi sakalam eva meva ito tinam petanam upakapati Ichitang patitang tumhang kipamewa samichato saphe purentu samkapa janto pana raso yata manichoti raso yata saphitiyo vivachantu saparoko vinasato mate pavatavantarayo sukhiti kayuko pava Apiwa tanasi lipsa nityang vuttha pajayino jataro tamma vatante ayuvano sukhang palam. Have you got some of my books?
English. We have some Dhamma for the Asking.
My Way.
My Way, yes.
You have that.
Yeah.
You have the Mountain Dhamma. I'm not sure if you have seen it.
No, I haven't seen it. Okay.